involved with. They and also at that time they wanted to get into silicon-based transistors.
Okay.
So after when Lick came, the idea was to establish a group that could bring in the technology to the point it was known at that time anyway, for producing or for attempting to produce integrated circuits, and also to look at, which is really a part of it, the development of a planar process for transistors. Now, the planar process was known at that time, but Sprague had no no experience in there whatsoever. And the germanium system didn't help them,
of course,
in that area. So, anyway, we one of the first things that, happened is we converted a part of the research center. Sprague had just built a new research center in, and they opened it in 62, just after I got there. And the decision was made that the whole bottom portion of it, the basement part of it, we would try to convert into a semiconductor processing area. And what happened there, of course, is we, at that time, we built our own furnaces. And, of course, we bought vacuum systems that were commercially available. But we built our own... epitaxy was not yet in the game. So anyway, we started we started out trying to produce the the old Siri Texas Instrument 51 series, which had two big capacitors on it, a couple of transistors, and a resistor.
So, well, so that was in, what, 62, 63? Or what was the time frame there? It was 1962?
That was 60, late 62, early 63. Anyway.
So if I interrupt you, the idea was, so had Sprague make planar silicon devices before, or was it? So had Sprague made planar transistors before, or did they just start making...
No, they continued making the germanium transistors. But anyway, in this in this process, since we were going to develop transistors for the integrated circuit, I mean, that would coincide very nicely with work on just trying to develop an individual transistor,
of course,
because the processes should be very similar. So anyway, but at that time, you know that the collector diffusion, there was no epi at that time. And of course, the collector diffusion took something like 7 days to do that diffusion. Because when you started out with the bulk silicon of low resistivity, and in order to get the resistance, the collector resistance down, you had to diffuse a dopant down to reduce the resistivity or the increase. So anyway, that to produce a circuit took over a week to get from one end, and this is just in small small lots, you know. And I got involved in a lot of this because a lot of the problems that they faced were, could be, or I thought was a part of the surface conditions as far which related to, you know, how well you could grow an oxide, how well you could diffuse through that. I mean, all of these are related to surface problems.
Absolutely.
And so I spent a lot of time in in evaluating surface conditions and getting through to the point where we could grow a reasonable oxide, which wasn't just full of holes. And to get to that point, by the way, took over a year before we got our first operating circuit. Not the specification, but it operated. So that took a year, and that was a big celebration of that.
But actually, it's fast. I mean, from if you go from scratch to an equivalent circuit in 1 year, it's very fast, right?
Well,
no, I mean it's
we didn't think so. That was lots and lots of lots.
And
as I said, the main problem was that you couldn't grow a good oxide. And this is primarily based on the fact that we didn't have good surfaces. And also, the other thing, of course, was contamination from the air, which I mean, it's not visible, but boy, it is to your process. And so those are the really the main things. I finally got through the oxide problem by using a double oxidation. In other words, you'd oxidize and then put your photoresistant, etch your pattern, and then remove the resistant, re-oxidize, and re-etch the pattern. That were any holes that developed where you didn't want them, because you had problems with the resist adhering too, because of contaminations developed in the oxide. This way, any holes that developed in the first etch were covered up when you reoxidized, and the probability of the other one, another one appearing in the same place, was pretty low. And so we got through through that problem.
So who was involved in the project? There was you. John Sprague must have been overseeing that project, right?
Well, in that actually there were in the whole project there must have been I think there were probably 6 to 7 people involved there, because it was, you know, we were covering the whole gamut from oxide growth to photoresist preparation and masking and diffusion. In fact, we even got to the point where we started growing our own crystals. And we did that for a while. But the crystal growers soon outdid us, and so we just shelved that part of it.
So were the other members of the group chemists as well, or they were physicists?
No, most of them were electrical engineers.
I see,
solid-state chemists. Well, solid-state physicists. That. I had one chemist with me, Paul Rowan, who I hired from, he came from Iowa State. He got his PhD there. And he was involved from the early aspects. I guess I hired him in the early part of 63. And so he was involved in this area for most of the time too. Anyway, we along with this attempt to build that, of course, they also got into the planar process. In fact, at that time, the EPI was starting to make its mark, and so we went to Bell a group was. We had a good relationship with Bell, okay, by the okay. way, because of the capacitor contracts
okay.
that we had with them.
Okay. Okay.
And so we kind of had good access to all of their semiconductor
okay.
Area also.
Okay.
And so
okay.
they, I think that Mr. Sprague called him one day and said, hey, the stuff that they guys call EPI, whatever it is, mm-hmm. Can you show us something about it?
Okay.
And so we got an invite down, and we went down and spent mm-hmm. 2 or 3 days down there.
Okay.
And learned a great deal about okay. the potassium growth,
uh-huh.
As known
okay.
at that time.
Yes.
And came back and uh-huh. set up our own
okay.
EPI system.
Okay.
Which took a bit of developing too mm-hmm. to control all of the variables in there at that time was
mm-hmm.
Was horrendous. And of course now it's you don't even think about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But so that got us into the EPI, and of course that immediately solved a lot of the problems in the planar transistor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it solved a great problem in the ICs because you didn't have to do that, mm-hmm. that deep collector diffusion anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we installed that, and
mm-hmm.
then we did develop
mm-hmm.
A process.
Mm-hmm.
For NPN transistors,
okay,
you know, using
uh-huh.
That system, and that went into copper. We put in at that time. We got to the point we could purchase some of the furnaces that they.
Okay. Okay.
And so we put in a complete processing area uh-huh. in Concord.
Okay.
That took care of the
okay.
The NPN transistors, and they uh-huh. became pretty efficient at it
mm-hmm.
as measured at that time. And so they got a good product line out.
Okay.
And of course then the request came in, well we need PNPs too.
Okay.
Well that's a whole nother basket. And we played for some time trying to develop that process
mm-hmm.
and to control the boron diffusion for the
mm-hmm.
for the bases was really uh-huh. really kind of
uh-huh.
difficult too.
Uh-huh.
But we did finally get a process that
mm-hmm.
didn't really yield a lot,
okay,
but we
okay.
could get
okay.
material for
uh-huh.
For sale anyway.
Okay, so this would have been in 1964?
This is...
Okay.
64, 65.
Okay.
Yeah, in
okay.
that area.
Okay.
And just...
Mm-hmm.
Now, I kind of pulled away a bit from
mm-hmm.
that because that's when I got into really the start of my work in implantation.
Okay.
I mean, I was looking at it, and I think
mm-hmm.
some of it was related to
mm-hmm.
the problems they were having with boron diffusions for the PNP transistors.
Mm-hmm.
And the start of this whole thing was my desire to find a way of introducing
uh-huh.
dopants
yes.
accurately enough and
uh-huh.
precise enough so that you could get a reproducible diffusion
okay.
from
okay.
unit to unit to unit.
Okay.
And at that time,
uh-huh.
Electron beam evaporation was coming into place. I mean, there were a number of systems for for EB deposition. And National Research Corporation in Cambridge had developed a system which was not a magnetically controlled system for for a large beam, but it was a focused ion beam so that you could just focus this beam on it and get a very high power density to evaporate whatever you wanted to evaporate.
Okay.
So they had put that together, and I'm not sure how we got interested or wind of this initially, but anyway, I got in contact with Cliff Sibley, who was working on that process on that part, and he showed me the start of the system, and so we said, "Hey, that looks great," and so we bought one of them. And it was a couple of months before they finished it and brought it down. But on it, we had a focus beam, and also the possibility of deflecting the beam. Says that I guess the initial thoughts were we might want to use a number of different materials, so maybe we can just deflect from pot to pot, you know. But anyway, that came down, and I got looking at it, and I said, geez, wonder if it might be possible to deposit a film of boron-containing material on the surface, and then drag it in with the electron beam. And I was wondering if that might be more reproducible than what we do in diffusion furnaces. And they started playing with that, and I got Cliff came down, you know, I was talking to Cliff about it, and he came down, and he said, yeah, he says, maybe we can adjust this beam so that we can, you know, put deposits in different places and then check and see what's going on. Well, that little beam had a lot of power. And, of course, the problem that we ran into, of course, is you couldn't, without losing the focus capabilities, you couldn't reduce the power of the beam to a point that you didn't start burning into the silicon. So he, I guess that's when he really got involved, and he said, well, let's give that a try, see if we can do something about changing the mechanics of the focus system with heavy to work at lower energies. And came back and then got looking, and I think it was papers from the isotope conference that I happened to be looking through and talking about separation of ions. And there was just then some work going on in the terms of penetration. I mean, how far these ions are penetration in different substances. So he said, hey, what if we change those electrons in that system to ions and see if we can't do the same thing that these guys with the accelerators are doing? Well, we're going to do it in silicon. And I think I was that idea was mm-hmm. not an original idea, because I think in reading the literature, this young man named King from Ion Physics had a high voltage accelerator, and mm-hmm. he was trying to do some implants mm-hmm. With that. Mm-hmm. So I can't be credit of saying that that was our idea. But anyway, we mm-hmm. we thought about this, and then of course mm-hmm. Cliff knew Leon Love, who was the department head of mm-hmm. the separator group
okay.
in Oak Ridge.
Okay.
And so contacted him and said, mm-hmm. we said, hey, that's a source of ions. Because mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. we can't modify
okay.
this equipment to handle that very
okay.
quickly.
Okay.
And in fact, we got to learn a lot before mm-hmm. we can do that. So
mm-hmm.
He says, that's a source of ions. Let's see if it
okay.
works as
okay.
far as
mm-hmm.
getting the ions into the semiconductors and what
yep.
sort of control you have.
Mm-hmm.
So he called Leon, and mm-hmm. Leon said, yeah, come on down. We'll
mm-hmm.
we'll take a look at it and see if we can do something to help you.
Mm-hmm.
So we buzzed on down, and Leon said, yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay.
So he said, yeah. He says, I'll assign one of the accelerators,
mm-hmm.
One of the isotope
okay.
separators, which are monstrous things. I don't
mm-hmm.
know if you've seen one of these things, but monstrous things.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they can run amps of beam current, too.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, mm-hmm. he assigned this young fellow, who's a graduate student at the time,
mm-hmm.
Gerald Alton. He'll work with us, and
okay.
we'll see what we can do. So
okay.
we talked to Gerald and went in and checked the separators. And of course, the first thing we said is, man, those currents are way too high for us.
Okay.
what they're doing. And so Gerald said, well, we can control that, so
okay.
we can get it down. What do you want? Well, we want microamps.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of held him a bit, but he
okay.
said, yeah, he says, we'll give it a try.
Uh-huh.
But we had to design wafer holders to fit
yeah.
in the system so that
yeah. Yeah, of course,
could
yeah.
actually
yeah.
Try to implant in
mm-hmm.
silicon itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sat down, and Gerald was very good. I mean, he showed us the system and what was
mm-hmm.
available as far as mechanics to
mm-hmm.
operate
mm-hmm.
anything,
mm-hmm.
and came up with a carbon cylinder,
okay,
which we could put in and we could spin it.
Mm-hmm.
So we, knowing that much, we went back and cut, of course, our wafers at that time were small wafers anyway, they weren't very big.
Mm-hmm.
But we cut 5/16-inch squares
okay.
out of these, and then grooved the carbon
yeah.
crossways
mm-hmm.
so that I think we had 12 rolls going around.
Okay.
And little carbon clamps that would come
mm-hmm.
just come down over the edge and
mm-hmm.
put them in and put the little clamp on.
Okay.
And so we had a holder.
Mm-hmm.
And put it in, and he and Gerald put together a system to shadow that holder from the
mm-hmm.
from the hole beam with just ports in it, so that
okay.
we could
okay.
run the beam on
yes.
any one of the ports.
Yes.
So that reduced the current, because it's a
uh-huh.
the total current
yeah. uh-huh.
divided by the
okay.
area. Then.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So we got, I think, up to about 40 microamps or thereabouts
okay.
of current. And, of course, those were low-voltage systems.
Uh-huh.
And 40 kilovolts was the maximum on their power supplies that
okay.
we used. So
okay.
that was the
okay.
intensity. And, of course, later we started going to doubly charged ion.
Uh-huh.
So that gave us twice the voltage.
Okay. Okay.
And but the initial work was all done with about 40 kilovolt beams.
Okay.
And we took the original experiment was to find out if, I mean, number one, if we could put ions into the silicon without doing a tremendous amount of damage. I mean, damage is the thing that really everybody was concerned about. We wanted to do that. And we wanted to do, you know, as had been suggested by Schott, I think, that you get better penetration or deeper penetration through open parts of the crystal.
Yes.
If you run it into the crystal. We wanted to check and see if we could do that. And thirdly, of course, and the most important, we wanted to find out if the ions got in there, could we really make junction to them?
Yes.
So we set up the experiment to with the three different orientations of silicon.
And okay.
5/16 inch squares.
Okay.
And then implanted, we simply counted the beam current and we knew the area. And so we knew what what the dose was.
Okay.
And we implanted the three the three different orientations and took them back to Sprague and took the first ones out. And of course, the easiest way to find out if you got a junction, of course, is you angle that to stain it, see whether you have a conversion. And we did that, and lo and behold, we found we had junctions. However, if you test them electrically, they were rotten junctions. Just, I mean, they're visibly, it was there, but you couldn't do it. So we just proceeded through the whole thing, thinking, well, maybe it's damage that's causing the problem.
Okay.
And so we looked at, in short, we looked at annealing processes to see if we could remove the damage. And we did. We found we got good junctions electrically, but we also found that the junctions had moved down sometimes almost 50% of the original depth.
Yeah, because of the temperature, right?
And so we thought, well, we're probably diffusing this stuff because we said it was a low temperature, but but with the damage there and what have you, we might be getting some some diffusion. But anyway, we checked these and we found that the junctions on the 110 plane were deep, and on the 100 and the 111 plane, they were not quite so deep. So that seemed to go along with the idea that Schott had proposed. So I think at that point we had established that we could inject ions, we could get good junctions with and evidently the crystal properties had repaired themselves to you to the original with the thermal treatment. So maybe we had a process.
So that was the first
basis for the first paper. In fact, the first paper, I think, or the first talk I gave on this was at the American Physical Society meeting. And they, I'm not sure if this is intentional or what, but they put me on last in the program. And I sat through 2 days of that meeting, and finally it was up to us to give to give the paper in there. And I gave that paper to three people. problem. Everybody had left.
Okay.
Three people. Which wasn't very encouraging, but anyway, that was the first paper.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And so the next, we refined the data on this and then wrote the paper which I gave at Aarhus on the, gave this one at the electromagnetic isotope separator conference.
Okay.
And we, I got there, and there I think we got a pretty good reception.
Okay.
Very few of these people were semiconductor people.
Of course, yeah.
They all involved with the electromagnetic separation and
the
ions and what have you. But I think we got pretty good reception. In fact, one gentleman, Gloton, from University of Grenoble in France, came up to me afterwards and said he would very much like to have me come down and talk to his people at the university. He says, because that sounds like a real thrilling thing to do, using in semiconductor research. And so I rearranged our schedule and went down to Grenoble and spent a couple of days down there and talked to them. And they were very enthused about it. In fact, I think, if I recall right, he went on a year or two later and published a book. We collected a lot of data on what had gone on and some of the work that we'd done. Asked if he could use some of it.
So his lab was a semiconductor lab?
Yeah, a semiconductor in the university, yeah.
Okay.
So that was encouraging because there was a spark of interest there. But anyway, to get back, the research progressed because there was still a lot of unknowns, like what's happening. I mean, are we collecting or using all of the ions we impinge on the surface? Or what's happening to them? Is the damage really repaired? Is there any diffusion that goes on when you try to thermally anneal these things? And so, we still didn't have any equipment to do any of the implant, so we still had good ties with Oak Ridge. And so I talked to Leon for a while, and I said, we've got this problem that we need to get more information on. And I said, and I think that information...